Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell Reed, my co-host Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, Diane Taylor. You decided to publish The Gift of Memoir with BPS Books, Diane. Could you tell us a little about this firm and why you chose it as your publisher?
I first heard about BPS Books when Cynthia Reyes came to our Spirit of the Hills writing group one Saturday morning with her memoir called A Good Home, and I had a look at it, and I thought it was really well done. I thought I'd explore them. I found out a bit of the history. Don Bastian, who owns BPS Books and is the editor, he used to work for Stoddard for, years, until Stoddard went under after 9/11. Stoddard had an office in 9/11, and they never recovered after that. Three other people I know had books published by him, and they raved about him. So I thought, that's for me.
We were also very interested in your method of raising money for the publication of this book. Tell us about that. Were you pleased with your fundraising effort?
Yes, well, crowdfunding I hadn't even heard of until 8 or 9 months ago, and ran across an article in a newspaper about a man in Australia who had been fired by his government from the ecology post. They did away with that part of the government completely. He went online to raise money to keep doing what he was doing to save the environment there. Within 4 days, he had raised over $1 million. And I thought, wow, there's something in this. And then it kept popping up, and I thought, I'd heard of various people who had raised money for documentaries and for toys and games, and I thought, why not a book? Because it can be quite costly publishing a book.
That is an amazing story. I thought that crowdfunding was associated mainly with charities, and so I was surprised when you told me that you were going to do this. So would you do this again or advise others?
Well, it was a month out of my life. You have to keep track of what's happening on the campaign and send out notices and maybe add a perk or two. You give perks for various amounts of money that are offered, that are contributed. It was really a full-time job. Would I do it again? No, I don't think so. But for other people, yeah, I would recommend it.
Could you read us one of the articles you've written? You've contributed to our Spirit of the Hills anthology, Hill Spirits, in 2012, and have sent material again to Hill Spirits 2, to be published early in 2015 by Blue Denim Press. Perhaps one of those contributions would be the right length for a reading.
This is a piece that I wrote after I read Elizabeth Abbott's book called Sugar. It's an amazing book about the history of sugar throughout the world, and especially the Caribbean, and I used to live there, so it had special meaning for me. It's called Slaves to Sugar. It was published in a local paper, by the way. In the beginning, cane sugar was not known in Europe. When small amounts were brought back from the plantations that were springing up across the Atlantic in the 18th century, it was mainly used as a spice. It was expensive and therefore found almost exclusively in the homes of the wealthy. Everything changed when someone added cane sugar to the cup of afternoon tea, and word spread about how both refreshing and relaxing this was. Everyone wanted it. This want became a demand, and the demand justified, in the minds of those who stood to make huge profits, the stealing of 13 million people from Africa's west coast and transporting them to America and the West Indies for forced labor in the cane fields. 2 million of these people died in the holds of boats where there was little food, little air, little light, a lot of filth, and a lot of brutality from the crew. Another 6 million died on the plantations from poor nourishment, appalling punishments, extremely hard work and overwork of planting and cutting cane, and suicide from constant degradations and abuse. All this to satisfy the cravings of a very big, sweet tooth. At one point, an astonishing thing happened. Word slowly got back to England about the abominable conditions the slaves endured. Some men, remember Wilberforce? And women started to advocate for the abolition of slavery. And here's the astonishing thing. The women began a campaign to stop buying sugar. What a radical and moral act to deprive themselves and their families of the beloved sweetener. 300,000 people joined the sugar boycott against slave-grown sugar, and this successful campaign played a powerful role in the eventual Emancipation Act of 1834. Today there are no slaves in the sugar trade, right? Wrong. As Elizabeth Abbott points out in her brilliant book, Sugar, hundreds of thousands of Haitians cut cane in the Dominican Republic. Many of them are kidnapped and brought under force to the barracks where they live, six to a tiny room. No toilets, no running water, not allowed to grow vegetables, and breakfast is a piece of cane from which they suck the juice. Some are illiterate children. They are paid 55 pesos, that's $1.20 US, per ton by one of the big sugar conglomerates. Sugar's history of brutality and forced labor lives on. It makes me consider starting my own boycott. Where does the sugar I buy come from? I'm going to do some research on this, and if it comes from the Dominican Republic, I'm going to stop buying it. Maybe this way I can reduce my intake of sugar, and thereby reduce risk of obesity and diabetes. For I must admit, I am a slave to sugar. Sometimes I need comfort, and sugar fills that role. Or rum, which is made from sugar. Now you are learning a lot about me. But that's okay. It's for a good cause. The thing is, I really don't want my slavish consumer habits to perpetuate the 21st century slave conditions of Haitian or any other workers. I can be just as determined as English in the early 1800s, especially when I get my Irish up.
Thank you, Diane. Where are you going to sell the gift of memoir, and when will it be released?
The full title for my book is The Gift of Memoir, Show Up, Open Up, and Write. And I know that it'll be available on Amazon and the other online bookstores as well. It'll be at Penumbra Press in Grafton and the Lighthouse in Brighton. And there will be other local stores, but I just don't know where yet. Of course, from me too.
And when will it be released?
Okay, well, we're working on that. We're into the final edit, and it will be sometime in January, probably towards the end of January.
Many thanks to Diane for coming in and telling us all about her new venture. If you would like to listen to this program after it's been broadcast, from far away even, or any time, you can go to our website, which is www.wordonthehills.com. You'll find all our broadcasts archived there, and we hope you'll visit. To connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to wordonthehills897@gmail.com. Thanks to our listeners for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week.